Tim Osmond, hello. Sorry, I gotta unmute you. There we go. How are you, Tim Osmond?
Very good. We're getting up here on Valentine's Day. I'm looking forward to a hoaxiversary this week.
All right. What's on Valentine's Day? I forget.
Parkland. I want to revisit Parkland this year.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I think we need to review the major psyops of our time on their anniversaries, because you know the media is going to bring them up anyway. They love to recycle.
All right. Let me just introduce the show properly. I just started.
Oh, okay. You already started. Okay, go ahead.
Let me just start properly. Tuesday, February the 10th, 2026. It's the Fakeologist Show. It's a joint session between Fakeologist and IPS Monster. And if I sound kind of strange, it's because I'm fooling around with my mic and my boom, and I don't like the way it's blocking my view. So I have to figure this out better, but I started a little late.
So do you have a home studio? How do you set up? I mean, I thought you were in like a truck or something.
No, I have a home studio. I'm not in the truck at night. I'm a daytime trucker. I'm
okay.
I'm business hours. I'm not one of those over the road guys. So no, I have a home studio.
Awesome. I always pictured you in a semi, like driving across Canada at night talking.
No. There's no way. I can barely keep everything in between the lines when I'm not talking. No, this is too distracting. Now I got a whole studio here, and it's a wired connection. That's why I usually have no issues with the internet. We're totally wired up. So yeah.
Well, hopefully I'll be there soon. That's one of the reasons why I'm getting an office space, is I want to have a more formal studio setting. Mm-hmm. I also want to do more video in the coming days, because I think that's a major competitive advantage, and not having video is probably costing me in clicks. Not that I'm looking for clicks overall, but you have to somehow compete on some level in this environment. It's ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah, well, for sure. I'm not trying to get any clicks. I'm just having a good time here. So we'll do go through your Twitter feed, I guess, or is there any other? Do you want to just try and focus on?
Let's start on Twitter. I don't know if you know this, but YouTube took away the blue wrenches.
No, you're more up to date on technology than I am. So go for it. What are blue wrenches and what happened?
Well, the blue wrench is the symbol. It's like the logo of the IPS. The blue wrench is an emblem that represents the think tank, because in the early days of YouTube, we used to have many more people in the chats, 300-400. And the only way to have coherent conversation was to eliminate the trolls. And I was overwhelmed. So I handed out wrenches to anybody that I vetted. So eventually the IPS wrench squad was able to help us maintain a very peaceful and productive conversation when we were live. So we've always had the wrench. And whenever you give somebody moderator status on YouTube, it has a blue wrench next to their name.
Okay, I gotcha. So that's gone.
They replaced it with a blue shield. And I think they did it just to tick me off. So we decided that we're going to go ahead and just take that too.
So they just changed the symbol, but all the functionality is the same.
Yeah, yeah. So we got a blue shield to basically block the mind viruses they send your way. But yeah, we have a blue shield now in our penguins. As you can see on the screen, that's the new iteration.
Okay, I got it. Now, it's kind of funny you bring up mind virus, because I'm going to recommend a podcast today that is not mine. It's Germ Warfare. I interviewed this guy once, and he really does. He gets a lot of good guests that I've never heard of. And today I listened to a show called The Cult of the Chosen Ones. And it's very good. It was an interview with a guy named Makia Freeman, who I've never heard of before, and I guess I'll have to look into as well. So check that out. They were talking about mind viruses in this podcast. So what you just said is quite interesting. It's not a new concept. Many people talk about it.
Well, the person who really coined the phrase, I think it might have been Richard Dawkins, selfish gene, but it was elaborated upon by Richard Brody, the guy who designed Microsoft Word. So you think about it, what is a mind virus? It's a word. And then you've got Bill Gates with Microsoft, and there's this kind of interesting correlation between thought crimes and the physical virus. And these have been like parallel developments in thinking, and that they have pretty much, I think, inculcated into us to make these associations. So like mind viruses aren't really a thing. I think it's a tool that allows the elite to justify censoring the masses. But at the same time, to the extent that people are very passive about the information they consume, there might as well be mind viruses, because a lot of people are just passively catching ideas.
Yeah, we don't have our own thoughts. They're given to us. I've always said that, and many people have said that as well. So check out this very good podcast by Germ Warfare, The Cult of the Chosen Ones, and the links are at fakeologist.blog.
What is The Chosen Ones? Well, I think I know what it is, but...
It's this religion they call... It's not really Judaism, but of course it's the people that believe in the Kabbalah, the Torah, and the Talmud, whether or not they are Israelites or Jews or whatever they want to be called. So
he does, I see.
Yeah, so there's a whole group of people that are told that they are the chosen ones, and I guess sometimes the Muslims say the same thing, and then there's some evangelical Christians maybe that say that their way is the only way. So
I think every religion has its version of it.
I agree.
I think that's ubiquitous. That's what they sell you. You know, it's status.
Yeah. And if you're the chosen one, you can do whatever you want with the rest of the people. I think that's the whole point.
Okay. Yeah. Any kind of supremacist doctrine definitely has that in-group preference and eventually justification for those seen as lesser. Very toxic developments. And it's really an aspect of the hive mind. And there's a pretty good book about this. I think it's Howard Bloom. It's called The Lucifer Principle. And it's about groups and how a group is like a superorganism.
Yeah.
And how these things actually evolve as separate entities, more or less. And that their primary goal is their own survival. And it's very psychopathic and, well.
Yeah, for sure. And you got to just basically get people thinking that they are the chosen people and they'll do whatever they want, or whatever whoever's running them wants them to do. So, yeah, I think that's the point.
Yeah. And have you been keeping up with, I mean, I'm so Epstein fatigued, but one of the things that keeps turning up from this Epstein thing, is that these people are like buying into a club, like all these celebrities. And that's kind of what it looks like to me. This idea of if this stuff is true, the basic narrative is an elite class of people that are above any kind of accountability.
Yeah, it seems like this Epstein is a catch-all for anything and everything they want to explain. They said Epstein invented Bitcoin, so it's just getting more and more ridiculous, more and more reaching for just about anything controversial.
The main takeaway for me is simply that there's a direct link now between Jeffrey Epstein's email communications and some guy named Moot, the guy who started 4chan's.
Oh, right. That's right. That's right.
I'm like, wait a minute. Are you telling me that ground zero for Groypers, for Q, for the woke right figureheads, they all got their start there in 4chan? You're telling me that was started by Epstein? That's where QAnon started. I mean, so
yeah,
it seems like a closed circle. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, it's all QAnon BS. Yeah, I think Epstein is sort of QAnon 2.0, maybe.
Well, now they're really selling it to the left to go after Trump and the right, and they've replaced Mossad controlling Epstein with Putin and the KGB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gets back to who are they and who's doing it. So that's where that podcast might be informative. I'm going to try and get that guy on my show if I can. Calling all show bookers, if you want to book this guy on my show, if you can get a hold of him, that's fine. Otherwise, I'm going to try and reach out to him. But I always like people that sort of try and figure out who's in charge, who's doing it, what's the cult? What's the cult all about? Is Trump in the cult? Because obviously everyone talks about Trump these days. So
okay, there's no way Trump's not in the cult.
Yeah,
there's no way that he's not part of the PSYOP entertainment complex, based solely upon the fact that his every action on the world stage is correlated with the predictive programming. I mean, predictive programming is an indicator that what you're seeing is fake, and this includes people. And he's one of the most meta-scripted characters on the world stage. So there's no way he's separate and organic and independent. No, he's part of the machine.
Oh, absolutely. And when I watch this video from Mr. E, I don't know if you follow Mr. E, he's a regular on my show. When I see these creatures that are so cool, the Trump clan, when you see these people, they're so odd looking, they're so strange, and yeah, they're definitely in a they're in a cult. There's definitely something extra. I don't want to use the word extraterrestrial, but they are very odd people. Whether you call them the Addams family, the odd family, there's something off about just about each and every one of them. So who are they? What are they here for? Who do they represent? That kind of thing.
Yeah, that's hard to deny. I mean,
just look at these people. Do these look like anyone in real life? I mean, Trump himself is a super oddity in my mind.
You know
life.
What he is? We've been so conditioned. We've just been normal. We've been habituated to him. But no, I remember as a kid thinking that guy's hair is ridiculous. What the heck? I never thought he was a serious character. And now he's the most serious character in the world. I'm like, this is a clown show.
Yeah, I think it is. I definitely think it is. Yeah, he is definitely a part of it. As you said, he's definitely part of the system.
Well, he's deep in it because he faked an assassination attempt in Butler, which required his own conscious participation. Fight, fight, fight with the ketchup on his cheek. He is so deep in it. He's deeper than a crisis actor. He's like a lead crisis actor.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I agree. That alone definitely indicates what you just said. He's definitely part of the club. It's that's such almost a forgotten thing, though, isn't it? The whole phony assassination. It was just a footnote in history. It wasn't really given a really prominent place in the history of Trump.
I know. It was actually remarkable how they downplayed it and how it his hair it didn't hit like Charlie Kirk's death. And I think it was just because of poor special effects. I think maybe if he had bled out and then we don't see him for a week, that would have been huge.
Yeah, exactly. He should have been down for a little longer. That would have helped. If he just kept his mouth shut for 2 weeks. Or
it was underwhelming. I mean,
yeah,
I'm throwing
true.
Popcorn at the screen. Because we were expecting a big thing like out of Megalopolis, where Caesar Catalina, who's based on Trump, gets shot on the right side of the face, and it takes him like a week to come back.
All right, why don't we go through some of your tweets, because they're always really interesting. Again, unless you want to talk about Parkland, whatever you want to do.
No, we'll do Parkland. We'll wait till next week.
Okay. All right, so what do we have here? You retweeted, Kurt Cobain's death was a homicide. As shocking new private forensic findings question the suicide ruling. And this is, again, out of London, the Daily Mail. So do we even have to pay attention to this?
No, it's just clickbait. Okay. And I don't know. I'm still open to the idea that he's Rivers Cuomo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know what? Rick Rubin and Rivers Cuomo joked about that during an interview, which makes me think even more that it's the case.
I don't even know who Rivers Cuomo is. So I don't even know who we're talking about.
It's basically this band that, they have a more kind of nerdy appearance, but it's basically the contention here is that Nirvana went from, or Cobain went from Nirvana to this other group and different sound, but same person, and that he faked his death, 27 Club. Of course, right. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's just conjecture, but there are some compelling videos.
And what do you think the purposes of all these death fakers, whether it be Jim Morrison, and Amy Winehouse, Kurt Cobain, it's a long list.
The only ones I find plausible, and this would include maybe even WWF, is that if they're in some kind of a contract and it's part of the story arc and they don't want this icon they create to age in front of the public or have some horrible scandal, so they give it a pristine send off. I mean, that's the only way it makes sense to me. I think a lot of the death fakers in the rap industry are plausible because it's so lucrative. I think Charlie Kirk's book probably sold more because it was released after his death. So I think it's just good marketing strategy.
I agree with that. That sounds good. Remington.
But I don't think it's a facet. Like, I don't think it's a, like, we have death fakers. They're called crisis actors, atrocity propaganda. But the idea of, you know, celebrities coming back in a new disguise has been floating around for years, like Elvis coming back. But a lot of that is likely noise to cover up real aspects to the fakery. So I'm very cautious about that stuff.
All right. Next is, you tweeted something in Spanish, I guess, about the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we kind of looked into the symbolism and stuff. It was, you know, typical, though. Complete controlled outrage. They manufacture outrage for the right wing, overhype it. I was really not super overwhelmed by it, but you do find the undeniable elements of pagan occult ceremony encoded into the Super Bowl halftime show. This one had symbolism with three crosses made out of power poles, and then they had electricity going off, like they had blackout symbolism.
Okay.
And the last time we had blackout symbolism at a Super Bowl was 2013, Super Bowl 47, when it went dark for 33 minutes.
Okay, did you watch the event? I definitely did not.
I watched the first half just to visit with relatives, and then I got bored and I left, and then I watched the halftime show later. And one other element they had that you could probably connect to paganism or the great right is you did have Lady Gaga singing a song with him, with Bad Bunny. And she's wearing this flower called Maga, which means witch. She's got red shoes on. And the significance here is that she was just in the Grammys performing the song called Abracadabra in a red dress, wearing this like lampshade. I think it's made to look like an eyeball. But the point of it is that song is like, it's the song of, it's the name or the word of the new aeon, according to Aleister Crowley, and the book they base their whole occult religion around. And the song itself is about their high priestess who dresses in red. So she's been portraying this scarlet woman, red witch, Thelemic Babylon goddess for a long time. So for her to be there singing a duet with a guy dressed in white, well, where have we seen that before? Alicia Keys in red. And then you have Usher in white with the phoenix on his shirt. And so in their system of symbolism, phoenix and Christ are somewhat synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And the white, it represents the Christ, and the red is it's Babylon and the beast. It's this idea of Christ and Magdalene. So their whole occult religion has been encoded into multiple consecutive Super Bowl halftime shows. And this is just an ongoing thing. So it's just not surprising that they still fulfill those requirements. And they even had inexplicably like a wedding, a real wedding at the halftime show.
Right.
And the symbolism of the god and goddess is described also as a wedding, alchemical wedding. So anyway, I'm just saying, more occultism for the masses. And you brought up mind viruses.
Yeah.
And I was talking about this earlier today. The theory behind a lot of magic when it comes to like sigils and these symbols is that a person doesn't necessarily have to be cognizant of its meaning in order to activate it, to be engaged with it. And so if these things are just passively put out there in theatrical form, in the colors, in the words, the public doesn't have to know what they're consuming for it to involve them. And by involving, I mean, they become amplifiers and repeaters and spreaders of whatever is contained in that particular occult ritual or ceremony. So yeah, I think the Super Bowl thing is basically a pagan rite.
Yeah. Do you really think, they said it had 140 million viewers. Do you think that's real, or is that just more propaganda? Because do you think that many people watch it? Is it still big in the U.S.? I know it's big here, and Canadians are supposed to hate the U.S. So it's
like a holiday here.
It really
is. I would say, I mean, I find it hard to believe that 5 million people looked at Kid Rock, but everywhere I went and I was driving around,
Okay.
Everybody's in their homes. It was like a holiday. That's how they treat it. All the businesses, everything is geared towards Super Bowl.
Okay, so you do think it's a possibility that everyone is watching?
That a third of us, yeah.
Half of America.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it. I think it makes sense. Half of America, because the spouse is going to make the other spouse watch it, and then all your friends are watching it. It's bigger than nearly any other holiday.
Okay, so that's a real thing. Okay, so in other words, it's big enough that they're going to put all their messages into it.
That's the reason I focus on it. I think if anything is going to have a direct portal to the consensus, it's going to be the Super Bowl. It's like a 9/11 scale event. I mean, everybody's looking at it. Everybody's synchronized. Mm-hmm. People are betting money on it. They're gorging on food. They're getting drunk. And it also corresponds with a very significant pagan holiday, which is halfway between the winter and summer solstice. Christians call it Candlemas. The Gaelic Imbolc means in milk, I think. It's about the weaning of the sun god and the first appearance of green. And so the green field is highly symbolic in and of itself. One person that researched the matter suggested that Janet Jackson's infamous wardrobe malfunction exposed a sun piercing on her breast. So anyway, the point of it is she represents the goddess Bridget. So this is a pagan event. And that when I say it's a holiday, yeah, it's no more, no less a holiday than any other national holiday based around the sun.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's keep going. Here we go. In an astonishing coincidence, after hearing Savannah Guthrie, whatever her name is, televised plea to the abductors for her mom Nancy's safe return, a partial quote, which was directly from the movie Silence of the Lambs, I discovered through Grok that the recent abduction occurred exactly 35 years to the day as the movie's limited premiere release in Century City on February 1st, 1991. What are the odds?
Okay, so this is the thing. The reason why Silence of the Lambs is in the news right now is that Savannah appeals to the kidnapper not to hurt her mother, and line for line, it's right out of the mother in Silence of the Lambs asking for Buffalo Bill to let the girl go. Wow. So it's word for word. Then you find out it's the same date 35 years later. And then weirdly enough, one of the Patriots showed up to the Super Bowl in a Hannibal Lecter mask.
Wow. So they're bringing that back, promoting that.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what it means, but it's part of the picture right now.
And as always, they're not coincidences. They're all done on purpose.
Yeah. And one other point, because I brought up Abracadabra, Thelema, the New Age cult and all that. Well, their ritual is built around or centers around their Baphomet totem, which is this hermaphroditic chimeric thing. You know, it's man, goat, angel, but then it has it's both sexes. And
androgyny, yeah.
So that's kind of, so I'm like, okay, well, interestingly, the Super Bowl Sunday was actually the birthday of the creator of the Baphomet, a man named Levy, and it's Levi's Stadium. And somebody pointed out, and this is just bizarre stuff, but the 33-year-old Patriot logo, they call it the Flying Elvis.
Right.
Just happens to look like a side view of Baphomet's head with the horns.
We talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this Baphomet thing. So then the singer Bad Bunny, I thought, okay, there might be some androgyny symbolism here because he frequently performs also in a dress. But then I just saw this tweet where there, and I probably tweeted it, there's a tattoo in the middle of his chest with this figure that has two heads, a male and a female head. And the female head has the crescent moon like horns.
Wow, did you retweet that?
I think I did. It's probably going around, but if we are connecting this, as I have been, with establishment pagan ceremonies, they're consistently showing the same symbolism, event after event. It's like lunar, it's like goddess stuff. And the red and the white has been a consistent feature.
All right, maybe we'll find it as we keep scrolling. Okay, you retweeted this one. The supernatural is real. Levitation, reincarnation, near-death experiences, remote viewing.
For some reason, that's going around a lot. I'm finding a lot of stuff about remote viewing and the like. But I listened to this one in particular because he was just describing the concept of Satan and how it's mostly literary in tradition. And a lot of the concepts are extra biblical. And I think it's important to keep in mind that the concept the public has of things are often very distorted, and the sources are often like way off. So I'm just like, okay, why are we overreacting to these things? They've oversimplified the stuff to where the public thinks the elite are satanic. It's like, I'm sorry, but it's more complex. Mm-hmm. You could say that they're pagan. You could say that they have a more pantheistic or animistic view, but it's oversimplistic to call them Satanists because in fact, they're worshiping a different version of Christ, mm-hmm. a different concept of it.
So you listen, this is an hour and a half. This is worth listening to.
I would check out certain parts of it. I thought the part about the origin of Satan was good because there's just too many misconceptions. And I think if you're looking for Satanists or looking at it in that simplistic view, you could easily fall prey to things like Pizzagate or these made for TV pop. I mean, these conspiracy theories are so popular now. Everybody's talking about Epstein that I know. I'm like, wow, it's like 10 years old. They're finally talking about it and nothing's really changed. So it's just this overly simplistic narrative and it's not new.
Okay, I'll download this one then. I've never heard of this guy. This guy is who? Let's see. Allison? Dale Allison?
Yeah, it's an interesting talk anyway. I'm usually not super into paranormal, mm-hmm. but lately I've been taking an interest in the area of ESP specifically because I think that there is a faculty of the mind we call intuition that is excluded and contradicted by a lot of our programming to make us, I think, more susceptible to propaganda. So we don't see through things or we don't trust our own innate doubt when it's valid. And so I think that it's an important concept. So I've been looking into these ideas quite a lot because, it seems like a very intuitive person would be hard to bullshit with CGI fakery or grinning crisis actors versus people who don't trust their own sense of things and just go with what they're told.
Yeah. Scott Adams was allegedly a hypnotist and he died. He certainly didn't look very well. So I don't know if you ever followed Scott Adams.
Creator of Dilbert.
Yeah. I used to watch that cartoon.
Yeah. I was actually surprised. I saw that Scott Adams, somebody has turned an AI Scott Adams into a new Twitter account where he's doing an AI generated podcast in the morning.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
It's like a posthumous podcast. It might be the first one.
Is that right? That's on Twitter?
Yeah, I've seen it. And I was like, it's kind of creepy. And they did it with Charlie Kirk, where after Kirk died, he was giving sermons at these evangelical churches. And it's just AI generated stuff where he's just like, I'm in heaven, guys. It's like a promotion. I'm like, what the hell?
Okay. AI, there it is. AI coffee with Scott Adams. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Well, wait a sec. It says here. So this is, I see. It is a real episode. Okay. This is the real Scott Adams. Okay. And here's AI Scott Adams. Let me just see. This is episode 16.
Good morning, you dazzling coalition of sharp-eyed skeptics and dawn-patrolling idea warriors. Except for YouTube, of course. They're still licking their wounds somewhere deep inside.
I think
inside.
The guy needs to fix his audio setup because it's a little echoey, whoever set this up.
Well, it's because he's a ghost. It's probably the ghost reverb.
Okay. Well, it's a half an hour. Let me see this one.
Do-do-do-do, do-do-do-do-do. Good morning, you brilliant assembly of truth-seeking contrarians and caffeine-fueled contrarians.
Wow, that's actually really interesting.
Yeah, it kind of is. I have mixed feelings about it. I don't know what he would think about it. I mean, imagine if you you die and you transcend, and then you no longer have the same political opinions that you had on Earth, your divisive partisan views. And now you're like, wow, that's my legacy. I'm still down there.
Oh, I see. It was mainly on YouTube and then it got deleted. Okay, so here we go. This one is, okay, let's just see if it's gone. Yeah, the channel's gone. Okay, gotcha.
But to my knowledge, this is the first posthumous podcast.
So then he started putting it on Twitter. I see what happened.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to a brief pause inside modern civilization.
Yeah, I tried to watch his podcast back in the day. It was just a little too boring for me, but that's pretty good. I'm going to put a link to that one. That's pretty cool. That is cool. Will there be?
Yeah. Well, one thing about it is it shows you how easy it is if you put a sufficient body of content up to create a likeness of you that could easily fool a large number of people.
Yeah, that's really good. Okay, what is next? Jeannie Robinson, what's this tweet? The leaked iMessage screenshot shared in Jeannie Robinson's post appeared to be authentic based on available evidence. They date back to 2014 when Erica Kirk was about 25. And then what is this all? Do you know what this is about?
Yeah. Erica Kirk's looking worse by the day. Okay. And now the story is when she was 25, she was grooming teenagers, which is like same thing has been said about the right wing around Ollie Alexander and Nick Fuentes, where emails released were definitely not appropriate and they've just been validated. Now, true or not, it's scandal mongering, but Erica Kirk is an actress, mm-hmm. a soap opera on the world stage. And yet they've created such an engaging character. People are reacting to it. It's bouncing back and forth. And it makes me think that this is an alternate reality game. And ARGs, like Pizzagate even, are simply these games, more or less, that are played out on the world stage in front of the public. And it encourages audience participation and even reacts to the audience in such a way that it's a game that we're playing. But yeah, I think that she is 100% a scripted character and people reacting to it have taken the bait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too, for sure. Okay, another IPS graphic here.
Yeah, make those look rock, by the way.
That's great. So what do you have to do? Just type in a couple prompts?
Yeah, Todd, I need a cyborg penguin with a blue shield labeled IPS mm-hmm. and a laser blasting blue wrench marching over an army of trolls in 8-bit or however, whatever style you want, or gritty cyberpunk. And it's very good.
Create your own with Grok. All right. Get to work, fakeologist. Let's get a fakeologist graphic going on.
Oh, speaking of, really quick here. My other channel, Infinite Plane Radio, is being repurposed. It's now called Conspiracy Vetter.
Okay. Infinite Plane. What is the URL?
Infinite Plane Radio.
InfinitePlaneRadio.com?
No. It's YouTube handle is Infinite Plane Radio. But
oh, okay.
It's now being repurposed into Conspiracy Vetter. And what I'm doing is releasing a series of probably 10 to 15 minute long videos where I vet various popular conspiracy theories and, you know, what are the pros, cons, evidence for, evidence against. And I want to do this for quality control purposes, because sometimes I hear claims that have already been debunked that just need to be put to rest. And I don't think there's enough direct attention given to all these various claims. So, for example, I saw a YouTube video where some guy said Photoshop is ancient and the Mona Lisa painting could only have been done by a laser printer, at least as good as what we have today. And that might sound interesting and entertaining, but ultimately there are so many claims like this that it's a waste of time and it's noise. And so I thought, let me dedicate a channel to dealing with these various conspiracies one by one and engaging with people who might actually be on the other side. So that's a separate channel, separate endeavor, but I think it's important for quality control purposes. And so we can maybe even elevate the discourse a little bit.
Okay, I put a link to it in the show notes. And your other site, of course, is ips.monster.
Yes, or infiniteplanesociety.com.
And PTL Media, Lynn is on Thursdays now. We just moved the schedule around to accommodate various co-hosts. So that happens from time to time. People have different schedules. So we want to get everyone on.
Oh, one more thing, conspiracy vetter. So if you want to understand what my objective is, think Snopes, but Snopes from an off-world stage perspective. Snopes, if Snopes didn't believe the mainstream version instead of just disbelieving conspiracies. So it's kind of that as a concept, and I think it's very useful as a research tool. You don't have to agree, but you have to at least acknowledge, hey, these are the best. I will steel man the arguments or the conspiracy theories that I'm refuting.
Okay, let's get back to this stupid bowl here. So this guy is wearing some kind of, what is that, an internal mask? But it looks like
he's handcuffed. He's wearing a Hannibal Lecter mask. So I'm thinking he took Savannah Guthrie's mother. But that's your Silence of the Lambs tie-in.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Makes no sense, but there it is.
Oh, right. And you did the tweet there. I think, well, you got some engagement, 420 views. That's pretty good. Okay, now you're talking about Elvis, who I do spend a lot of time watching and listening to Elvis. So, occult Elvis, was Presley a telepathic demigod who could heal the sick and change the weather? I don't think so, but he had some good music.
Yeah, there was some stuff about his so-called New Age interests, and he believed he had the power of two souls. I heard these various claims, but, you know, I'm not inclined to believe anything about Elvis unless it's like I have one of his biographies. I have a bio about him.
Okay.
And I didn't get through all of it, but it almost seemed like a hit piece. So I kind of got tired of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's always something about Elvis. Okay. Another one in Spanish. Is Twitter gone Spanish?
It translates. Usually with Grok, it'll translate anything. I only noticed that one because the first field goal was 33 yards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I heard it was a boring game.
Yeah, I think it was as well. I'm only looking at it, like I'm watching the people watch it. It's like, what are they being programmed with? And so, yeah, again, it had blackout symbolism in the middle of the game. I mean, so that's kind of interesting. And then also it's Seattle, and a lot of the blackout related predictive programming ties back to Seattle. In fact, Wicked Part 1 ends with the Emerald City getting EMP'd. And the Emerald City is code for Seattle. And the Witch is code for Antifa. So it's full of the same predictive programming that the movies are, in addition to the weird occult stuff.
Yeah, Seattle has some emerald on their jerseys. Definitely fluorescent green, anyway. Interesting coloring. Okay, Elon Musk. What's he talking about?
Oh, Elon Musk is lowering your expectations. You're not going to Mars. Instead, he's going to focus on moon bases.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's like when you go get a car or something and they show you this model, you're going to get it. And then you're like, oh, we can't approve you. It's like, what a letdown. Like, you're walking away with a lemon. Like, we wanted Mars. Now we got to stick with the moon. Like, right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That'll never happen. Or the simulation will never happen.
Yeah, well, maybe if he wasn't so focused on politics. Like, I've been wondering, too, and I even asked him this on Twitter, but he doesn't respond to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, are you going to have borders on Mars? Because he's all about, you know, borders and nationalism and anti-immigrant, but how are you going to do Mars? What, you know, is it going to be multiracial? Is it going to be a repeat of Earth? You know, are we going to have divided in the same ways? Like, how is that going to work? And I think that's part of the thought experiment. I think the whole point of the space program, since it's not literal space travel, is utopianism and selling us on a vision for a one world. And I think that's kind of where it's going. Like, let's sell them on this as the way to do it and then convince us that this is how it should be done on Earth.
Right, yeah. Space communism. What else? Let's see here. Bad Bunny performed the song El Apagnon, which translates to the blackout, which you were mentioning, yeah.
And again, the blackout bowl was Super Bowl 47. So I took that to mean that the big predicted blackout 9/11ing of Seattle event with an EMP would probably happen during the 47th presidency.
Okay, well, we're getting a few caller-inners. You want to take some calls?
Yeah, by all means. By all means.
Okay, here we go.
Hold time, calls. 2 minutes, 37 seconds.
All right, caller-inner, where are you calling from? What's your name?
Okay, here we go.
Go ahead, caller-inner. Okay, I think caller-inner, try caller-inner going once. Come on, caller inner. I know you're listening to the radio. You got to turn down your radio. Caller inner, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, caller inner. Okay, that didn't work. I think it was John the Bayer. Let's try this caller inner.
Hold time 54.
It sounded like AI.
Caller inner, where are you calling from and what's your name?
Willard from Florida.
Hey, Willard from Florida. How you doing?
All right. Yeah, remember I sent the link for the morning of the JFK assassination. There was a news broadcaster, and it was an example of predictive programming, and I wanted to get Tim's take on it if he hasn't already done it.
Are you talking about the newscaster who just suddenly talking about all of the previous failures to protect the presidents with previous assassinations?
Yeah, precisely. Yes, exactly. Yep.
And you know what? Stanley Kubrick's movie Strangelove was going to be premiered that day, and of course that blocked it. And interestingly, in Dr. Strangelove, there was a line they cut out of it because of the assassination, where they said something about great day for a trip to Dallas, and then something about the president being pied in the face.
Yeah, I didn't know that you were aware of it. I'm not surprised that you're aware of it. I just didn't know you. I was always interested in your take on it. And yeah, you're right. That's the one I was referring to.
Yeah, and you know what I find intriguing too is the relationship between the Kennedys and the director John Frankenheimer from the Manchurian Candidate.
Right.
I mean, that guy was allowed in the White House. I'm like, okay, that's direct Hollywood connection. And the guy wrote the script for the assassination of not just him, but he drove Robert Kennedy to the Ambassador Hotel where he could get killed by his own mind-controlled assassin.
Right, and he made a movie called Seconds, which was about faking your death. Frankenheimer did.
Wow, I have to look at that.
Yeah, it's called Seconds, and it kind of gets to my next question. There was a fellow Ab interviewed years ago called Blue Moon, and he wrote a book called JFK TV, the Ab had posted it on Peace of Mindful.
That's right.
Have you read that one, Tim?
Well, I read it at the time.
No, I mean,
I have not read it. No, I will have to though. I mean, I'll put it in my.
You have to.
Yeah, check it out. It's on my. Just search for Blue Moon. Let me find it. Let's see if I can find it on my own site. It's called JFK TV.
Yes. It's looking back on it, it's just brilliant because he talks about how, you know, he mentioned the security failures like at Love Field, and he says, you know, those are all crisis actors put there.
Hey, look, and I found it.
Now,
yeah.
Willard, did you catch the thing about how, and Vanity Fair put this out, how 2 months before the assassination, Jackie and JFK did a home video where he was killed? And the Secret Service helped, and they used ketchup for blood?
Yes, yes. And he had the children involved, and it was the same Secret Service guys that were there that day. Yeah, explain that one.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And what's interesting is that fellow that wrote the article, he's traveling around the country, John Dean, you know, doing speeches. And John Dean, in his book, Blind Ambition, you know, he talks about in Watergate how things were coming to a head, and he was being made into a scapegoat. And he says in the book, you know, he wondered what they would tell his family, and he said, they'll fake my death, and I'll live in another country and give me a new identity and a business. Now, John Dean, where do you get that idea from about faking your death and getting a new identity? You know, where they would say, oh, he died, and how is that an option or a thing if it's not a reality, you know?
Right, exactly. And John, yeah, I got to look at that book. I got to watch Seconds as well. I'm writing that one down because I think the John Frankenheimer is a key to this whole thing, because he's got this direct correlation with two Kennedys. And then, of course, he was also director of Black Sunday, about a terror attack on a football game. But anyway, the guy's a predictive programming director, much like Kubrick.
Yes, exactly. He's just exactly what you described. So I think he made a movie called 7 Days in May, which was about a coup d'etat. So that provides a rabbit trail for people to go down. And with these connections that you mentioned, I mentioned this the other night with Polanski and Manson on it, it just shows you these guys are part of an intelligence operation. You know, that's why these connections and these coincidences, that they're just players out doing a job, a small group of people that performing according to directions given them.
Yes. Yeah, there's a common thread. And this also shows that this is a built-in aspect of media where our history is manufactured through these events.
I think that's the most important aspect of your work, what you just said. You know, showing how this concurrent programming, you know, game program, you call it, government, academia, media, entertainment, and the arts. And I think with JFK TV, that book, you could do a whole live show with it, just reading it and having your penguins call in, whatever you call your fans. I'm not trying to be insulting.
That's a good idea. I plan to create a library when I get into my new office space. We'll have an IPS library where all the books that are considered required reading will be stocked. And some of them, if they're public domain, I'll republish under IPS, like Edward Bernays's books, for example. Those are all public domain.
This is the first top classic. I mean, you start reading, it's just a treasure trove every page. Blue Moon did a brilliant job. And anyone that comes to the fakeologist site, it's like required reading. It's just brilliantly done, I thought.
Yeah, I put a link to it in the show notes, Willard. Thank you so much for giving us a heads up on that. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. That's all I had. And Ab, if you ever, I listen all the time. If you ever want me to call in, play my theme song, and I'll come running, okay?
What is your theme song again? I'm sorry. I got so many.
Take the trailer to the movie Willard from 1971 and mix it with Fortunate Son from Clearwater.
Well, someone's got to mix. Someone's got to mix that.
Yeah, somebody listening's got to mix it. They're obliged to. It starts out, Willard, you know, calling them.
Okay, and somebody mix that for Willard. So it's Fortunate Son by CCR.
Yep, and the trailer from the movie Willard from 1971.
Did you watch that back in 1971?
Oh, yeah, I was a kid, and Willard was a social misfit. You know, he just didn't quite fit in.
Yeah.
And one of those cheesy movies from the 70s, but the trailer has the quotes that you could put in. You know how Lynn, you know, turn it up.
Yeah.
You know, that did a brilliant job. And there's some quotes in there where he says, you know, Mr. Martin, you made me hate myself. Well, now I like myself. And that's how I feel about the media. The media used to make me hate myself, but I'm a fakeologist now. So now I like myself. It's like Rumpelstiltskin. When you can call what it is, you have power over it. And the media is a bunch of fakers, and they don't get my loose or traumatize me because I know they're faking it, and I have power over them, just like you have power over Rumpelstiltskin.
That's true.
I used to believe not only in climate change, but I thought we deserved it, and I was hoping a meteor would hit the Earth. Like, I bought into this anti-man misanthropy they program us with, and these days I'm a fan of man. I'm not really.
Man's pretty good. Well, you're lucky, Willard, because Portal Complex is in the house, and he's going to fix you up. So I think he heard you with your requests. So if he can't do it, nobody can.
yeah, the opening line is like he calls Willard, there's different voices calling Willard, and then he has that line, you know, you made me hate myself, well, now I like myself. And then, of course, the closing line is when he tells the rats, he says, tear him up! You know, to
tear him up.
To Martin.
Yeah, yeah.
You oh, see. Okay, so I've seen a more recent version of Willard, and the guy commands like a legion of rats?
Yeah, yeah. The original one, he has these rats that are his friends because he doesn't have any friends. And his dad died, and his family owns a business, and this Mr. Martin's the bad guy.
Alone for a minute. You made a fool out of me in front of everybody, and now you're trying to steal my house.
Oh, no, no.
I heard you! That's why you're trying to fire me. You made me hate myself. I thought a lot about it, hating myself. Well, I like myself now.
There you go. That's you, Willard, right?
You killed my friend. I killed who? How did Socrates feel when you stuck him with this? How did Socrates feel? Well, who the hell is Socrates? Socrates was the best friend I ever had. And don't!
I'm sorry, but AI will never be this good.
Yeah,
this is really good acting. I mean, you can't replicate this.
Tear him up.
No, Willie.
Tear him up.
No, Willie.
That's where you get to tear him up. All right, Willie, we got a couple more callers. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good night.
Have a good night. Okay, there goes Willard, and hold on a sec, got another caller in her here.
Hold time, 13 minutes,
Whoa.
17 seconds.
Okay, caller in her, where are you calling from? What's your name? Go ahead, caller in her. Caller in her. I think caller in her fell asleep.
I'm going to do an AI version of that Willard scene, but I'm going to change the rats to penguins. Tear them up.
Oh, nice. You like that, huh?
Yeah.
That was very good. Yeah, Willard's been around since the Hoaxbusters day. And our Hoaxbusters call with Chris Kendall, we all used to listen to it at least 5-10 years ago. So that was pretty cool. All right, where are we? Maybe one or two more, and then we'll wrap it up. We're at 52 minutes here. I like to keep these shows to about an hour.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, you got so much stuff here.
Great. We have another minute or so if we want to take another call.
Okay. Well, we'll wait for a caller in or to call in. Let's see here. Marcel Ploger, good night from the Netherlands. Thank you. And Portal Complex. Yeah. Actually, I think John the Beggar was on the line, but that was my, I had some settings that were wrong. I could hear him, but he couldn't hear me. So that's my fault. Here we go. The Epstein files revealed that in 2018, Epstein purchased 333 gallons of sulfuric acid. This is just QAnon on steroids.
Isn't it? Yeah, it's a repeat. But there's also now they've managed to link it up with their own Pizzagate. Now it's jerky as code for kids. It's being promulgated by all the same people. And then Andrew Tate comes out today and he's like, if nothing happens, then the whole system's rigged. So it's very demoralizing because it's essentially saying you people have no power. They're going to do this regardless. But people just take for granted that it's true.
I don't always fake my death, but when I do, there will be signs. Charlie Kirk. Okay.
Now, yeah, that's when he was pinching his neck and the guy asking him the question had a sniper shirt, a shirt that said sniper. Like, that's weird, right?
Oh, really? Kidding me. These guys.
Hold time, 6 seconds.
Hey, caller in her.
Hey, how you doing? John the Beggar here from the South Shore of the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Hey, John. Say hi to Tim.
Hey, Tim. How you doing?
Hey, glad you can get through.
Okay, I don't believe there were 140 million people watching the Super Bowl. I think there was only 133 million.
Were you waiting this whole time to say that?
No, I was just, what did people think of Bad Bunny? I think they Milli Vanilli'd him a lot, because I heard him once on Saturday Night Live, and man, was he bad.
I don't know much about him, but what do you know, Tim?
I don't know very much about him either, but it's just, the thing is, he had an obvious anti-ICE stance, as did Green Day. So they positioned the anti-ICE performers with, you know, in order to antagonize the MAGAs. And I thought it was interesting how this guy was chosen to do this way before it really blew up in the Twin Cities. So to me, it just looks like contrived outrage. And the people who were mad at him and his lyrics didn't look too closely at Kid Rock's lyrics. So.
Yeah, trying to promote Kid Rock as being a religious man is just, it's just beyond hilarious.
Well, yeah, and Kid Rock has also been part of the right-wing political warfare for some time. Like, he was the one, I think he made a huge donation to Daniel Penny for strangling the mentally ill homeless guy in the subway. So, you know, he's one of those politicos. He's connected to Trump, like Vanilla Ice. And it's interesting how, on the one hand, they're like, they're against rap and stuff, and they're against a lot of these artists, but then they're happy to take on Nicki Minaj. Mm-hmm. And then they'll accept white rappers.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Vanilla Ice to come out and do a song and dance where they have ice out there supposedly fighting a bunch of people.
Well, they did. They actually had that performed at Mar-a-Lago, and Christian Gnome was there dancing. And then you have Jake Lang, who was a J6er, driving to the Twin Cities in a U-Haul, blasting Ice Ice Baby and dropping bags of ice at the protesters. So this actually kind of, this is all fueling the culture war. And you look at these, like Jason Aldean put out a song that was anti-BLM, and he's friends with Candace Owens. So even these musicians that you see, like the actors, are operatives in the psychological warfare.
Definitely. And I think Bad Bunny definitely was, because they really Milli Vanilli'd him, because he's really not that good. Nowhere near.
Well, they say he was wearing a bulletproof vest because of racist haters or something. And they also, they made the news because his 56 million subscriber Instagram account was deleted, supposedly over death threats. So this is all just political agenda, if you ask me.
It's and drama, yeah.
I also thought it was kind of interesting, like, Seattle, you know, versus New England Patriots. I thought, well, Seattle's kind of ground zero, Chazistan, Antifa versus the Patriots. So, and then you had Green Day, very much anti-ICE. So it just seemed, and then, you know, the Lady Gaga, another propagandist for the left. So it just seemed to me the whole thing was mostly political, and it was planned in advance that this guy was going to do this and it was going to incite this reaction. I mean, I'm unimpressed, but.
All right, John the Beggar, thanks for calling. I'm going to take one more call.
Okay, talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Hold time.
Bad Bunny is trash. I know Spanish. The lyrics are complete brain rot, according to JRGMT. Caller in, or where are you calling from? What's your name?
Brian in Washington.
Hey, Brian.
Hey. To both you, Tims.
All right.
Let's just say that John LeBon, January 24th, 2026, episode 76. He's talking with a gentleman from Missoula, Montana. A cogent critique. And somewhere in the middle of that interview, he mentions his crazy Uncle Ab.
Yeah.
Who likes to utilize the technology to track and monitor his child's cell phone. This is, of course, of extreme interest to me. If I say, hey, Tim, you know, they are placing these data centers that you promote and love in the middle of areas that don't have water, like Texas. And your response is, oh, but they're recycling the water. I think that's inaccurate.
Okay.
You are promoting a technology, and I think Tim Osman is in bed, in the same bed of that promotion. You know, we need to dropkick humans and replace them. How many podcasters are having conversations with computers live on air? It's day after day. My thought on this, and I will get off the line, if we had spare energy, and you know, you have to produce energy, and I'm sure there's creating quite a bit of carbon.
I love carbon.
Whatever the term is of releasing CO2 through burning petroleum products, known by our opponents as fossil fuels, we're producing all of this CO2 to make this energy, when in reality we could be utilizing this energy to remove from the septage, the effluent of humans, these PFAS that are currently making it through the septic treatment plant and being spread on farmers' fields. There is a HTC, hydrothermal carbonization, very similar to biochar, Tim. There is a technology that could remove, utilizing this, it's kind of like a pressure cooker, and we could have these facilities spread out over the landscape to turn what is currently a cycle of poison. You're eating and ingesting all of this unfortunate chemical PFAS, and it's going out through the septic system. We could turn that material into something that could indeed be fertilizing, much like the Amazonians did in the 1500s. They are mixing charcoal with human feces, but this is all just, you know, not the most popular subject in the planet, because you know, nobody wants to talk about that. They, in, you know, the Pacific Northwest and Puget Sound, where I live, everybody's blaming it on the loggers for this, you know, they're killing the orcas, killer whales. No, it is this ridiculous, flush it down the toilet, and when there's a high precipitation event, well, they're overloaded, they can't process all this effluent, and well, just open up the valves and dump it, toilet paper and all, into the water, and then we'll blame it on the loggers.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian,
Brian, I know you like to go on, but do you have a question for Tim Osmond? And you said you were going to hang up for the answer. Sorry to cut you off. It's only 1 hour show.
No, I understand. It's after an hour. And yeah, Tim, you believe that AI is going to surpass everybody, and we're all going to try and decide, do we want to go to the pool or the tennis court today? Because AI is going to do everything for all of us. And I just could not be more in disagreement with you. Nobody can do what Jenna and I do every day. I don't care how many robots and drones and helicopters.
Oh, look, the thing is this. It's not that AI is going to take over.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Brian.
It's people using AI that will have an advantage over those who don't. So ultimately, you're still against people. You're still going to be dominated by the same forces, but now they're going to be using AI. So AI isn't separate from its users. It doesn't exist independently.
Okay. Well, and I put a note in the show notes about the Bondversations number 76 that he referenced. That's our friend, johnlebon.com. First hour is usually free. and it's a conversation. And he was just talking about me using Google Maps. And anyone that gives you permission, you can see where they are. And I have used that in the past. I still use it.
Hey, don't worry. People worry about being tracked and stuff. It's like, you realize we're in a zoo. Mm-hmm. You know, the zookeepers know where we are at all times. Like, there's like, you're never off the grid. And I think that's just how this thing works now. I mean, you can't really turn back on that. And it's weird. I'm getting a lot of advertisements for things that I'm thinking about these days. Like, I'm literally not even searching them.
Oh, you're not even,
they're reading our minds.
So you don't actually say them out loud?
No, I think about them intently, and I get ads right in the middle of a YouTube video. It's like, breakthrough an ad. I'm like, wow.
Well, I pay for YouTube, so I don't get in the middle of a video. But yeah, I doubt that we all agree that our phones have microphones and they are recording our voices and they read our email because people use Gmail. It was given to you for free, and people all by and large are using Gmail or Hotmail or whatever, or Outlook Mail. So those are the big guys, and they read your emails, and the post office was formed at the very beginning of time so they could read your mail. So they could see what business and monkey business you were up to hundreds of years ago. So nothing is new under the sun. So, yeah, that's interesting. I don't think Google's reading my mind yet, or Microsoft, but I guess it won't be soon enough, maybe.
Honestly, it's a pleasant coincidence for me. So I'm like, wow, I didn't know that was available. Oh, I definitely need that. That's a good idea. And again, these are ideas I'm having throughout the day. And so maybe I'm talking about them, or maybe I indirectly search it and they're using predictive models. Oh, people will search this, we'll look for this. So I can see where they're arriving at the stuff, where it might seem like, you know, Arthur C. Clarke said, any sufficiently developed technology is indistinguishable from magic.
I love that quote. That's a great quote.
All right. Thanks again.
All right, Tim Osmond, as always, tons of information, tons of great ideas. You come up with so many good retweets and ideas. Everyone should go to ips.monster and support Tim Osmond, help him out, help him get back to starting an office again, get back to his regular shows. But in the meantime, we're happy to have you on every Tuesday for an hour and going through all your stuff. I find it really interesting, and I think others do too. And thanks for bringing your audience, huge audience as usual, from the Infinite Plane Society on YouTube, on X. So big crowd tonight. And someone even scanned this QR code if they wanted to donate to me, fakeologist.com/donate, or at ips.monster, you can go support Tim Osmond over there. And thanks for the callers. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to all the commenters. And thanks again to Tim Osmond. And we'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody.